Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Paul Mines. I'm the Chief Exec of Biome Technologies, and you're in my hands for the next 30 minutes. So I hope I provide you an interesting insight on Biome and the markets we operate in. So Biome Technologies, we've got two divisions, one of which is called Biome Bioplastics and one of which is called Stenalco RF Technologies, both sort of technology-based and both have sort of market-leading positions in their own space. And this is why I think it's an exciting space to be a chief exec and to be an investor. You know, our bioplastics business is right at the heart of the global plastics problem because part of the solution will be in bio-based and biodegradable plastics, and I'll explain that later. And our engineering business, the core part of its revenues come from the production of fibre optic cable, which is the sort of core of internet connectivity and 5G communications. And I'll talk about that a bit as well. Our group is listed on AIM, a market cap of eight million. We protect our IP robustly in terms of patents, etc. And we're working on building market-leading positions in the spaces we operate. 2019 highlights. On the bioplastic side, we've just been growing and have grown for the last three successive quarters. We've just surpassed the revenues of last year at the nine-month stage. The customer and application base is broadening. We've just received certification for some more new materials that we're launching in the market, and that interest in the plastic space continues to drive interest in our materials and our growth. In terms of the RF Technologies business, we're anticipating revenues this year. We had an exceptional year last year in 2018 when revenues peaked up to seven million. We think there'll be about 4 million if you read the LMB forecasts that are in the market. And for those of you who are interested in analyst forecasts, they're available on LMB's website. But we think that the RF Technologies business future growth will be very much driven by demand for internet capacity and 5G rollout over the next few years. And the group successfully raised 1.3 million in October to support the growth of the bioplastics business. So what's the investment proposition, I hear you say? Not very loudly, but what's the investment proposition, Paul? Right, you know, so in bioplastics, we've got a very distinct high-performance platform. We've also got an emerging position in industrial biotechnology, which I'll describe. And that really is being driven by that change in public perception of plastics. The RF Technologies business is cash generative. This year, according to LMB, it'll have an EBITDA around the million mark. So we've got a sort of mature business that churns out the cash and a growing bioplastics business. Despite Parliament, governments, the world's best efforts, we successfully did a placing of 1.3 million in October, which gives us really good fuel in the tank for growing the bioplastics business in the next year or two. And we're using some of that to continue to invest in sales and marketing. And I would say as well that we've got an established market team with very committed management team, very committed to governance and transparency. So just taking back and looking at each of the divisions in isolation, Biome Bioplastics. I could have picked a thousand pictures to put on the right here, but you know, if you've picked up the FT or any magazine recently, you've seen a picture of plastic waste. And plastics are very much in the global spotlight for their environmental damage. I would say, you know, what's caught the zeitgeist is the end of life and plastics in seabirds and animals and things like that. What's less apparent so far, but I think will become one of our drivers over the next years, is the greenhouse emissions associated with the manufacture of plastics. So for all the sort of flight shaming there is about how you shouldn't fly, in reality, the global current plastics business emits about twice the amount of CO2 emissions than current flights. You know, and I think this will come out, particularly as more focus is put in electric cars and decarbonisation of transport and heating. This number is going to become more under the spotlight. And this set of graphs is taken from a variety of sources, but the key one is a paper in Nature earlier in this year that looked at the likely evolution of plastics between now and 2050, and you can see under a number of scenarios, even with extensive recycling, the carbon emissions from the plastics industry sort of reaches between 8 and 13% of global carbon emissions. And you would expect me to say this, wouldn't you? But, you know, in an approach in which you want to keep carbon emissions from the plastics industry no more than they are now and still allow global growth, you have to do a whole load of things. You have to make plastics do a lot more recycling than there is now. You have to use renewable energy to make them, and you need to use bio-based materials. And so I think that will come as a driver over the next few years, as well as an ability to use biodegradable plastics. So, you know, recycling is my next bullet. Is the answer to recycling, is the answer to the plastics problem recycling? The answer is no. It's part of the answer. Global recycling rates at the moment are probably about 8%. In the UK, they claim 44%. They're actually nearer to 8%. There are no simple answers to the problem. You know, the plastics industry this year will put out about 350 million tonnes of plastics, and it's growing at about 4% a year. I think that bio-based and biodegradable plastics have a space in that, and increasingly they're seen as an important part of the solution. And consumers are asking and demanding and looking for different solutions. Particularly where I think bioplastics work is where you've got materials that get contaminated by food. So food packaging, caddy bags for that takes your food waste off to the anaerobic digester or the composter, materials that are difficult to clean. So that sort of materials like coffee pods where you've got food and plastics commingled. So that's the sort of start of where these materials are really working. By all means, do your own research. There are a number of sort of reports around that sort of predict that sort of the expected market growth of bioplastics is about 25% a year over the next 5 years. You can draw your own conclusion of that. 2 points here. The last one is there are sort of a number of factors that are sort of driving that demand, but you know, do not expect ubiquitous adoption of bioplastics everywhere tomorrow. And that's because our price point is different from oil-based materials. Typically 2 to 4 times the price of oil-based materials at a material level. So you know, it's not a surprise that our materials are starting to come in higher value, fair trade type organic packaging, and then will gradually work their way around. And although for Biome itself, about 80% of our sales come in the US, because that's the market that's seen the fastest adoption of these kind of materials, the UK is beginning to change. And here's the sort of set of industry targets for the UK by 2025. You know, these are very ambitious. And they suggest that 70% of supermarket packaging is either being recycled or composted by 2025. Now, at the moment, if you take something like flexible packaging, which is about 450,000 tonnes, about one third of UK packaging is in flexible packaging, about none of it is either recycled or composted. So for these targets to be hit, there's going to be a huge change over the next few years. So our business, what do? We develop and manufacture bioplastic compounds. And I hope this helps. We get asked sort of where do we sit in the value chain? And we don't make potatoes or corn, though those are some of our inputs. We get involved in talking to people who extract them and specifying we want from those sources. And we buy in other materials, fillers, cellulobic fibres and things like that. We do get extensively involved in the formulation. We do then take those formulations and manufacture them at toll manufacturing facilities. We do then supply them to the people who injection mould or make films or make the plastic products. We do a bit of this ourselves. We make some non-woven filtration materials. And then we get involved in sort of discussion with the brand owners, but we're not a brand owner ourselves. So hopefully, and then the back end of the chain, we take an interest in how that goes around the circle in terms of composting. And I've visited too many composting plants that I really want to do for the rest of my life. But it's important we understand what's going on around here as well. We typically focus on the section of the market a lot of this market is quite new, quite technical. Our sales development cycle is typically 2 to 4 years in terms of working with customers to affect what they want in their packaging. You know, they've probably been working with oil-based materials for the last 20 years or more. And so approaching how to use a bioplastic needs a lot of hand-holding and a lot of technical development. I've been doing this for 11 years. We've got a team that we built up over the time. We have a sort of low capex model in which we contract our manufacturing facilities. And so typically, just so people understand, we buy the raw materials, we supply them to the toll manufacturer, we get involved in that manufacturing process, specify how it's done. After it's done, we then take the materials and then we hold them in stock and then ship them on to our customers. So that's our sort of position. We've got a portfolio of commercialized products. Includes barrier packaging for coffee, biscuits, cereals, high-temperature rigid materials, non-woven filtration materials. A strong 80% of the sales from the US, and a pipeline of about 15 development projects underway at the moment that we hope fuel the sales of 2020 and 21 and beyond. I mentioned earlier we had a successful placing of 1.3 million in October. And why did we need that? We've got a number of projects that have sort of been through that 2 to 4 year sales cycle and are emerging into the world. The first two of these are sort of a contracted position with one of our customers in the US. The others are less formal arrangements, but we are clear. You know, this year, or the analysts would say we're going to do around the 3 million of turnover. Next year, we expect our bioplastics business to do something like 6 million, driven by these four projects. The first one is some cutlery for a company in the US who are launching alongside their recycled range of materials, a whole set of cutlery that is compostable as well. For those who have known us, this has been a project that's been on the cards for some time, but we finally got to the finish line on some materials for a coffee pod range in the US that is launching in this quarter. Then we've got a customer out of California who's doing sort of nutrition pods, sort of a thing that you go to the gym and it's difficult to describe, but you get a flask and a protein shake, and the revenue started in Q2 and expected to rev up during next year as well. And then in the sort of packaging space, we have another customer predicting significant growth. So I've described where our current business is. We're also benefiting from quite a bit of supportive government investment in something that we call industrial biotechnology, which is the genetic modification of organisms and enzymes to produce new materials. This is not going to result in new materials that we can put on the market next year or the year after. We've been at this for six years. We've received something like 5 million of government funding, and we've spent in total about 6 million on this. We're now up to the kilogram stage of new materials. We are intent on a path of eventually scaling these up, probably by contract manufacture as well. We're at the kilo stage. Next year, we would hope to get into the hundreds of kilos, low ton stage. These are new polymers based on new underlying monomers as well, for those of you who understand this space. And we're using wastes to actually make these materials. So straw, wood waste, and food waste as well. And why this pursuit? You know, at the moment, the bioplastics industry rests principally on crop-based inputs. So we think the significant change that's going to come here is being able to use waste-based inputs rather than crop-based. So this is partly about trying to produce materials with new functionality and also about trying to produce materials at a different cost position. And these are new polyesters. You'll recognize polyesters. It's the thing that you have your water bottle made out of. We're collaborating with a whole set of universities in both the UK and in France and Spain. We've got filed 4 patents so far. And we're convinced of what we're doing at the laboratory scale, and we're just getting out of the laboratory and starting to scale up. And the next 24 months will give us a much clearer view of the commercial potential of these materials. And in the recent fundraise, we sort of earmarked a couple of $100,000 to keep this work going. I think what's quite excited us as well is, who knows what will happen in the UK government over the next few months, but over the last few years and into this year, the schemes in place to support the commercialisation of these kind of materials has accelerated. And so since I was here last year, the government have announced a 60 million scheme to support smart, sustainable plastic packaging, and we are part of that process and talking to them about how that might try and accelerate this work. So that's the bioplastics business. Just to talk about the Stenelco RF Technologies business. So this is a specialist OEM engineering business. RF welding is, and heating is like microwaves. You heat materials from the inside out by using electromagnetic waves. What we are known for in this market is making furnaces for fiber optics. Difficult to tell, somewhere between 50 and 70% of this market, depending on how you describe it. And right at the core of making fiber optic cable sits a Stenelco furnace. Most of our sales go to India or China, as you might expect, where these materials are made. And in recent years, this has really provided the cash that has supported our investment in the bioplastic space. Just to give you a view of what they look like, typical sales price, £100,000 to £200,000 each. They run at about 2,000 degrees using sort of specialist materials, inert gases, so they don't burn themselves up. The fibre optic market has seen incredible growth in the last few years. Last year we moved very quickly to realise that. And we see a lot more potential in this market as it goes forward, and we're putting quite a bit of internal investment into the next generation of furnaces, better control, better sealing, etc., as we persuade our customers to continue to also upgrade their facilities. Bullet point two here, as well as fibre optics, a couple of years ago we started to push for revenues from other parts of the radio frequency spectrum. And we're starting to get some traction, still small compared to what our sales in fibre optics, but starting to make progress in sort of general industrial, medical markets. Over the last couple of years, we've launched a sort of set of new power supplies into that space. But I think, to be clear to investors, it will be fibre optics that drives the growth over the next few years. In terms of where we are, these were our September published half one numbers, and what you'll see there is the revenues in the first half were down. Behind that, you've got the bioplastics business starting its sort of acceleration, where we've got the RF Technologies business backing off a bit from its position of last year. Overheads were similar, small loss this year compared to a profit last year. And down here at the bottom, you can sort of see the EBITDA loss. You can see a small amount of CapEx going in, and then our working capital start to change. And that's what sort of preceded our fundraise in September. As the bioplastics business has started to pick up, we see the need for more working capital, and hence the fundraise. These couple of slides just give you until 2018. I've been at this for some 10 years. You can see it's been a slow start, but I hope that gives you some feel of the kind of work and direction we have got going in this business. On the right hand side, you can see really how in the last three quarters the position in bioplastics has started to change and accelerate. And on the left hand side at the bottom, you've just got a few guides to this year, 9 months, the 30th of September, 5.1 million. We're Southampton based, 38 employees, market cap at about 8 million, and no debt. As well as the forecasts that are in the market, we also have a set of sort of internal KPIs that we do publish against. And this is the sort of ambition we've got for the group, which is a sort of 25% growth rate across that 2018 to 2020 period. We think the bioplastics division has the sort of potential to have a sort of 40% growth rate as we go forward. We're aware that we're a small business with a limited customer set at present, and part of what we're doing is trying to broaden that customer set. And those who watch our RNSs over this year will see that in bioplastics particularly, we've got new customers coming on and in new sectors as well. We're not expecting to be dividend paying in the next few years. We will continue to sort of invest that in R&D because we see lots of potential for the bioplastics side of the business. And I think for those who want to know, why did we raise some money? We raised some money in the middle of the year when we had sort of 1.7 million in the bank. But what we can see coming is quite a significant need for working capital as the bioplastics business grows. And so there were three reasons for raising the money, one of which was the sales and manufacturing of the projects. We've got manufacturing going on in the US, Europe, and in the UK. So we're sort of supporting quite a significant increase in our activity. Plus, there's plenty of potential in the market, so we wanted to keep the sort of people, the sales team and the technical team, and grow them as well. And this is where I started. So what's the investment proposition? You know, I hope what I've described to you is a Stenalco RF business that will go up and down as capital markets do, but is consistently cash generative, and a bioplastics business with lots of growth potential and in the right space. And then the recent placing gives us sort of fuel in the tank to really accelerate the bioplastics business. Thank you very much. And for those of you who want to know a little bit more about the technology, we commissioned a set of videos last year that might make you smile. We've got this sort of mad professor type. So if you Google www.thinkplastics.com, you can find out a little bit more about the technology and how it fits compared to other options in the plastic space. Thank you very much.
The revenue last year in the RF division that dropped down was...
Yeah.
Clearly, it was a one-off or something. What was the nature of that?
So 2017 was 4 million. Last year, 2018, will be 7 million. Was 7 million, and this year will be, according to forecast, about 4 million again. And pretty well every one of our customers expanded capacity last year. This year, some of our customers are putting more capacity in or replacing old assets. So, you know, we've referred several times that last year was exceptional. It was. Pretty well every one of our customers put new capacity.
And will 5G, if all things pan out?
Yes. So, you know, the 5G towers are all a lot closer together, so they all need a huge amount more cabling. So, you know, there are a whole set of forecasts out there about how the requirement for fiber will continue to grow until 2030 at least. So, you know, there will be continued growth for need of fiber optic cable. How that matches to our exact build rate of capacity is difficult to predict in any one year, because it will be lumpy. It'll depend on when our customers decide to put capacity in.
How big is your moat? You've got four patents, or at least you filed four patents.
On the industrial biotechnology side.
Yeah. So what about your competition and...
In the sort of current business that we're generating sales from, we've got sort of two granted patents, third one coming along. But I would say in the current business, we depend more on our market position and the fact that we've spent 2 to 4 years with those customers developing materials particularly for them, and we may or may not have contracts with them. So current business is not particularly patent defended. On the industrial biotechnology, where we put the 6 million in over the last 6 years, we use a company called Kilburn and Strode in London. We've put the four patents are a reasonable patent thicket round a number of the new polyesters that we're developing. So I think we're quite confident that we've got both freedom to operate versus competitors, i.e. that, you know, we're not overlapping with other people's patents, and that those patents are written well and a balance of broadly enough and tightly enough to protect what we're doing.
So I've got three questions. Sorry, could you?
By the way, before you start, I'm going to say behind you is Declan Brown, our FD.
Aye.
So if we go into financial questions, I may call on him before. But sorry to interrupt.
So the first one is just on both businesses. Who are the competitors at the moment? I mean, is there any obvious strong competitive threat at all? Shall I start with that one?
Yeah, start with that one. So on the easy one to that is fiber optics, where there's a company called Nexstrom in Finland, and they are the other main player in this market. And they make both the furnaces and the towers for producing cable. So they're an integrated player, whereas we're a non-integrated player in this space, and there are pros and cons that go along with that. So they're the only competition of any value in the space. Bioplastics, most significant competitor in Europe is a company called Novamont in Italy, and they're a credible competitor, technically strong. Their focus is more volume orientated than us, in that they focus on the sort of plastic bag end of the market, but do play in some of the spaces we play as well, but tend to be a bit distracted. Then there are a number of small competitors around the world. There's a company in Holland called FKUR. There's a company in the US called Danima. The BASF have got a division that works on a portion of this technology that's applicable to plastic bags. So, you know, there are a number of different sizes. There aren't hundreds, but neither are there two. They're sort of a couple of handfuls.
And then just on the Stenalco side, how many of your furnaces are there actually out there in the field right now? What's the average age? How long do they normally last? And
I'm not sure I've got all of that in my head. They tend to... So last year, in 2018, we sold 40. This year we'll sell...
18.
18. And probably over the last 5 years, our average was probably 15, 17 a year of that kind of scale. This is a gross aggregation because there are furnaces of all different scale. That probably leads to there being, I think we have done these numbers, sort of 70 to 100 active furnaces in the market at the moment. They, in the last few years, they've tended to be in operation between 5 and 10 years. And that depends on, I would say that time has been shortening because as fibre technology's moved on, our customers have been taking out working furnaces and replacing them with upgraded furnaces that produce more fibre in a given unit space, stroke, more efficiency. So I would say when I first started in the business, it was probably a sort of 7-year life cycle. It's probably a 4 to 5 year life cycle at the moment as they're all rushing down the volume curve to get output out.
Then last question, just going back to the other business, the coffee pod. Could you say a bit more about that? I imagine it's quite confidential, but who's the launch customer? What are you making it out of?
So those who know us, so if you were to take some of those pictures and look at them, you'd find that in the US market, there's a sort of, what you know probably in Europe is the sort of Nespresso tile style pod. In the US, the market's dominated by Keurig, and then there are a number of players that do Keurig Me Too type pods, and we're supplying that market. The total market is about 1.2 billion pods, of which about 25-30% are in this Me Too product. And we're supplying two of the four main players in this Me Too kind of category. One of which, if you look them up, is a company called Rogers or San Francisco Bay Coffee Company, and another one's called Cameron's Coffee, who are out of Minnesota.
So we're in the bioplastic space. So what sort of recurring revenue level do you get? Is it...
So this year we're expecting about 3 million of...
But are you going to get the same 3 million orders coming back again next year, which you then build on, or is that just a one-off?
Yes. So I think what we really... You know, what's really encouraging over the last few years is customers who move out of oil-based materials to bioplastics don't then go back to oil-based plastics because they position their brand on... So I can't say no one will ever move away because people's businesses come and go. But so far, we've seen that our positions with those customers have been very sticky. And because of the length of time to develop the products for them, you know, the competitors haven't been coming in and trying to steal them or haven't been successful at doing so. So our 6 million next year is 3 million that we got this year, roughly, plus those four products, you know, adding another three on. Yeah.
You mentioned the US pod business. I understand from speaking to a colleague of yours that in the US market, those pods sell for around 50 cents per pod.
About that, yeah.
What part of that 50 cents do you...
Two is the packaging materials that are associated with the pod itself.
And you're responsible for the entirety of that 2 cents?
And that's the material component of the pod. So obviously there are then others in the value chain who take that material and make it into the pod itself. So I think that is about these are estimates. So we think the total constructed value of the pod itself is probably about 5 or 6 cents. then the coffee's about 4 cents of value. There's another 5 cents of manufacturing it. So we think the Ex Works cost of a pod is about 15 cents.
And for a non-compostable a pod, taking your 2 cents, what would...
1 cent.
1 cent. So you're not adding hugely to the cost of the...
Correct. That will be, do you want to join the marketing team? Yeah, that's
well, I might have been persuaded, but
that's what we would say. But you know, but if you're watching every penny as a manufacturer, you know, it's still a proportion of your 15 cents of Ex Works cost. It's someone else can do the percentage for me. You know, it's 7%. There you go of your Ex Works price. So it's not huge in your 50 cents of selling price, but it's not immaterial in your manufacturing costs. So back, you know, why isn't there universal widespread adoption immediately? There is a price disbenefit.
What about plastic bags? I mean, that must be a huge market. I understand you're going to be, you know, three times as much as the other people. So it's not a supermarket deal. But
so we sell a little bit to plastic bags, but we are not the cheapest in making materials for plastic bags. And, you know, our speciality is to... You know, is more technically challenging than a plastic bag. So I could sell you material, but you could find it cheaper in the market. And I'm not after just pursuing volume for the sake of it. So, and within the plastic bag market, the customers chop and change. It's more a commodity type business. As I was saying earlier, you know, we have not lost our positions with our customers because we've spent 2 to 4 years developing a specialist product for them, and that's the kind of business I'm trying to build that's sticky in that sense.
Lavazza launched a compostable pod this week. I think they got a huge amount of press coverage, and I can see that market moving quickly in Europe. How does their offering differ from yours, and are you likely to see Nespresso and others with plans already in place to follow suit? And who are they using for their compostable materials?
So for Lavazza in case, they're using a Novamont product. It's a rigid pod rather than a flexible pod, the type I've shown before. But you're right, whereas the US has led in this compostable pod space, the European market is now starting to bubble along. And I've spoken to some other existing investors, we have a project in the European style pod space, and we're working on that. I can't say any more at the moment, but I'm sure in the next few years you will see more Nespresso compatible type pods come out with compostable materials.
Could you estimate how long you expect to benefit from 5G rollout? How many years? And would you consider selling that business as the bioplastics develops?
I don't know the answer to that rollout question at all. At the moment, I think the marketing of 5Gs is ahead of the actual implementation, which I think is partly why we've seen this sort of bit of indigestion. A lot of our customers putting in capacity last year, then a subset only continuing to invest next year. We're getting reasonable noises about next year, but I think for more acceleration, I think 5G implementation will have to sort of pick up, and I don't have a firm handle on when that will be or how long it'll then last. That was the first part to your question. So I think we ask this question a lot because there's no link between the two businesses technically. Our Allenby estimates would have the bioplastics business sort of passing the RF business next year in terms of sales volume. I think at the point that we can see that RF, that the bioplastics business is confidently self-standing without the cash generation of RF, and at that point, if we can also see there are investment opportunities in the bioplastics business that can't be satisfied easily, I think it then becomes an option. But up till now, we've not chosen to make that change.
Sorry, just maybe a related point or question. So there's no common intellectual capital between the two business areas.
Myself, the FD, and the financial controller. Yeah, if I can dare to call myself intellectual capital.
Do you expect the bioplastics business to be a sort of high margin business in the future on the basis of all this intellectual property than in R&D you've done over the last 4 or 5 years?
I don't know what's high. You know, I at the moment, you know, the business requires a lot of R&D, a lot of sales effort. A lot of effort goes into educating our customers and the market. But you know, I think that will, that education element will drop. But I think we'll go on investing in R&D for the next 10 years. You know, the oil-based industry's had 60 years to do this. We've still got a lot to go. I think what you will see is that I was talking to someone earlier about this, is, you know, although many of our products so far are developed for one single customer and one single application, we're just starting to see that we can then take that same product and say, okay, well, it now works in a US style coffee pod, but actually it might have a role in a European coffee pod as well. And we've done 7/10 of the investment, and actually with a tweak we can get it to work in another market, for example. So I think what you'll see is that you know, we get some gearing going, in that we don't have to do this 2 to 4 year, that sales cycle will reduce as we go forward and as our product portfolio increases. Long answer to a short question, but that's probably the best I can do.
Paul, I think we've run out of time, but thank you very much.
Thank you very much, folks.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.